Again, thanks everybody for joining the session. My name is Zach Brim. I'm working at the Tropical Research and Education Center in Homestead for the University of Florida. I'll be talking today about a cover crop experiment that I've been working on, looking at the growth and competition across various different agroecosystems that represent South Florida. So this is the first time that I'm giving a presentation with a lab, and so I just wanted to thank my lab and the folks that work for me and have been able to make this experiment go. It's been very exciting to be putting this together as a model experiment, and I couldn't do it without my grad students and biological scientist. Also, thanks to the University of Florida Office of Research for providing me with the seed grant in order to get this work done. So this is an aerial image of the Tropical Research and Education Center. I'd just like to show you this picture so you can get a sense of where I'm working from. This is a quarter square mile 16 square 10-acre blocks that represent the diversity of agroecosystems in South Florida. When I say Homestead, you can think about Miami. That's where we are at the southern tip of Florida. So these are three agroecosystems that we have at the research station. We have a natural area set aside. It's a pine rockland that transitions into hardwood hammock, that southwest 10-acre block. We also do a lot of vegetable production, which in South Florida we do in the winter. They call them winter vegetables, but they're pretty much just vegetables that we grow in the winter. These are open fields, and then the other primary work that we do in food production is the tropical fruits. This is a mango orchard here. We also have a large acreage of avocado in the region, and then a whole bunch of tropical fruits that you may have never heard of before. So what am I looking to address with this experiment? These are the three main questions that I'll be talking about today. How do cover crops grow in these various agroecosystems? Also, how do the cover crops grow in mixture? And then can we use cover crops as environmental indicators? So what I've done is I've set up an experiment, a single cover crop experiment, in these four locations at TREC. The northern sites are a sort of legacy agriculture in the last decades or so. So one thing you should know about South Florida and Miami-Dade is in order to do agriculture in these soils, for those listening at home, I just put quotes around soils, you have to bust the rock. You have to take a plow to the rock in order to grind up this limestone rock bed. So we call it we have a separate distinction for this soil. It's called Rockdale soil. So these two upper sites were plowed decades ago and have since been in agriculture being discs. The two sites below are sites that I recently rock plowed. I'm the sort of agroecologist that goes in and further fragments the forest in order to do some interesting research. Hopefully the value of that research is greater than the area that I've further disturbed. So we have a vegetable field in the upper left, a fruit orchard, so an open field surrounded by a commercial fruit orchard, the hardwood hammock, this hammock fragment that was freshly repaired, and then an old collection, a set of old tropical fruit orchard trees that are sort of minimally maintained as a diversity collection. So these are the four sites that I'll be referring to. I also have three cover crops at each of these sites. Sun hemp, Crotalaria gentii, which is a tall, slender stature legume. The sorghum Sudan grass is a sterile male hybrid, commonly used in the South Florida region, and velvet bean, which is a ground cover vining legume. So these three species are meant to represent different functional groups within the cover crops that could be chosen for South Florida. I've also taken these cover crops and put them into pairwise mixtures. So these letters related to the cover crops and their mixtures is what I will be calling a treatment as we move into the results. So just briefly about the experimental design, it is a 6x6 Latin square, like a Sudoku, over a area of 400 square meters. There are six treatments that are in the rows and columns. Those six treatments are the cover crops in monoculture and the pairwise mixture of those cover crops as well. The experiment that I am reporting today in this talk was planted in the winter, November 2018, and harvested in January 2019, so this is the dry season, but I'm also doing this experiment continuously, once in the dry season, once in the wet season, and rolling along over a couple years. And then just to mention again, this experimental design is replicated at each of the four agroecosystems that I mentioned. Okay, so to return to our research questions and focusing on the cover crops growth in the various agroecosystems. Okay, so just to briefly describe what's going on here, we have the different agroecosystems listed on the x-axis. The cover crops are what's been faceted, and the y-axis is fresh mass, in this case, tons per hectare. The error bars are listed as 95% confidence intervals, so if you wanted to do the statistics visually, then you're kind of looking for how those error bars overlap. So what are we seeing here? We're sort of seeing different signals by species. So the legumes are kind of agnostic to location. They're kind of growing pretty consistently regardless of the agroecosystem that we plant them in. However, the grass here is kind of showing something entirely different. These sites, the old collection and the hardwood hammock, are the sites that were freshly prepared. Five times more organic matter in these new soils than in these old soils, and the grass is certainly showing us something different there. So then what happens when we look at the results in terms of the various mixtures? Okay, so because there's so much going on with this experiment, in this case I'm just breaking it down by species. So what I've done is sort out the data just for sun hemp here, again, for each of the four locations. And then what's on the x-axis is the species, in this case sun hemp as a monoculture. And I've lost the mouse. Here it is. And then those mixtures, so sun hemp, sorghum, Sudan grass, sun hemp, velvet bean, and this x-axis is consistent across each of the sites. Now, before we get to the questions, I'll just answer, how do you compare these treatments when you've got a monoculture and a mixture? Well, in this case, I have sort of standardized, if you will, the data as a fresh mass per individual. Okay, so now we're, instead of talking about tons per hectare, we're talking about grams per individual. Okay, and what strikes me as interesting, again, as far as the legumes go, is that by and large, there are no differences among location, and there are no differences among treatment. So whether you have a legume with itself or a legume with a grass or another legume, it seems as though we're not seeing any statistical differences, at least noted here, in those treatments. Now here we go looking at the grass again, where we're seeing those signals of the system in the treatment. So the location, again, has a larger effect, it seems, than the treatments themselves. So the grass is showing higher biomass in the old collection than it is in the hardwood hammock, and certainly than in the vegetable field and the fruit orchard. Now again, potentially not showing any differences among treatments. So The premise of this experiment is that the monoculture and the mixture would have different impacts on crop physiology. The competition of these species ought to have an impact. I'll reiterate that this was a wintertime planting, and so this was a time where water wasn't particularly available. We put on a little bit of water at the beginning to make sure that the seeds would germinate, but then we just left the field to sort of be rain-fed, which is very little. So these plants are generally small, and I'd expect the results that we get from the summer when there's a lot of water to show somewhat of a different pattern here. So again, velvet beans, kind of a mixed bag. Ultimately, statistically, not significant for the effect between the treatments. Again, the mixture and the monoculture and the locations. So I like to use this metric, the land equivalent ratio, to describe the impacts of crop competition on the growth and treatments. So LER, land equivalent ratio, looks at a pairwise mixture in this equation. So where you have the mass of sun hemp in mixture standardized by the mass in sun hemp of monoculture, both of these expressed in a unit area. So graphically, this is what it looks like. So the mixture, the biomass of the mixture, standardized by the biomass in monoculture. If the LER is greater than 1, then what that demonstrates is that there's some species complementarity, that by putting these species in mixture, we're actually seeing a premium or an increase in biomass just for the fact of putting them in mixture, having the species diversity within your system. Okay, so what does that look like in these early results? I'll get to my conclusions that this is sort of a mixed bag of results early on, but I just wanted to show sort of as an illustration where the LER of 1 is where we would expect monoculture to be sort of equivalent to the mixture. And if you use these 95% confidence intervals that do not overlap with 1, then we sort of see consistently that there is a benefit to these species in mixture. So where we see that twice is in the fruit orchard. And so having sun hemp and sorghum sedan grass and sorghum sedan grass and velvet bean in this specific system would increase the biomass. And so looking at this LER in the various different agroecosystems can give us the opportunity to make recommendations to farmers for their specific system. If your system has these characteristics, you might want to use a mixture. If your system has these other characteristics, then you might be fine just with one of those species. And the last piece, just sort of a thought experiment for how we can use cover crops as environmental indicators, similar to how we might be using a very high technology in order to be doing precision agriculture. So can we plant a cover crop out into a field and then describe the heterogeneity in the field? We like to laser level our fields and assume that that field then is homogeneous. You plant a cover crop in that field and you still see differences in growth, and that's one of the directions that I see this experiment going. So what I've done, you can see the 6x6 for each of these four sites. I've taken the treatment and the mean of that treatment and then standardized these results. So this red sun hemp here is more than 2 standard deviations less than the other sun hemp treatments in this experiment. This sun hemp sorghum sedan grass is more than 2 standard deviations greater. So although it's a bit messy when you have all the treatments in the experiment, what I'd like to show over the course of the experiment is that we might be able to come up with some patterns about different parts of these spatial variability within the experiment in addition to the sort of overall averaging of the statistics. So just to describe my takeaways in obvious fashion, the growth response across agroecosystems is species dependent, and similarly species dependent with response to the mixtures. We've got some spatial variability that we've got to look into, and by and large, in order for this experiment to be successful, we've got to run it a couple different times over a couple different seasons in order to see where those patterns arise. And so just to really summarize what I didn't say today is that it's complex, and ultimately we'll need to be looking further to get those interesting patterns to emerge. Thank you, everybody. I think I gave myself a minute for questions. Thomas.
Yeah, so in a system like this, I think of the storage of dendrites as being sort of the biomass powerhouse, but it's also a nitrogen-limited system, so it's really the nitrogen fixation and, crucially, rhizodeposition by the legume that's going to drive the growth of that.
That's right.
So do you know how much rhizodeposition you can get from the sun hemp and the velvet bean, and do the data fit that model as it was not?
So the research station has had decades worth of research on sun hemp. And one of the things that they've found is that the recommendation for farmers to fit in their rotation is about 90 days, and it takes about 100 days to start doing root nodules. Now, we've done the experiment a couple times, and the first time we ran the experiment, the sun hemp grew really well, but we didn't see nodules. And then we ran it the next winter, and we saw nodules right away. So this might be an example of how doing the cover crop treatment in repetition might start getting that nitrogen. Ultimately, the nitrogen that we're seeing in the fields is coming from nutrient decomposition as opposed to sort of through root exudates.
You're making me feel better about my success with nodulation.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. is there any last minute questions?
Just a question on how you were taking your data. You said that you were measuring not by tons per hectare, but by the biomass per individual plant.
Sure. The question is related to the methods that we use to measure these plants. We sampled the plant biomass for a 1 meter square, and then we also did a count. And so when I'm reporting the grams per plant, it's essentially that 1 meter square by the number of plants in that 1 meter square.
Okay. And when you used two species, did you reduce how many per acre?
Well, and that's why it's able to, by using the number of individuals in the total harvest, I'm able to be at a per plant level, which sort of washes over the seeding rate. Thank you, everybody. I appreciate you coming to the session, and happy to take any questions later on.